Case of the day, U.S. versus Paul Bradley, 10-1080. Mr. McGowan, another frequent appearance person, visitor to the court. Yes. You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrew McGowan. I'm with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I do represent Mr. Bradley in this case. In this case, the district court imposed a sentence of 20 years when the guidelines recommended a sentence of between 5 to 6 years. The district court did not sufficiently support the 20-year sentence with sufficient reasons. At the sentencing, the government recommended a sentence of about seven years, which is an above-guideline sentence. The government uses a basis, the damage to the victim, the problems that the victim had encountered. The government tied it to a guideline calculation of about two levels because the victim was like a vulnerable victim. And this court has encouraged this type of analysis when determining a variance from the guidelines, whether up or down. Unfortunately, the district court did not do this in this case. Instead, the district court appeared to reject the guideline calculations out of hand. The district court said that the guidelines were so inadequate that to consider them would be a travesty of justice. The district court then proceeded to ignore the guidelines, in my opinion, completely. Instead, the district court looked at the statutory range, which was 5 to 30 years. And although the guidelines are advisory and the district court can vary from them, they still exist. And one of the reasons they exist is to avoid disparate sentence for similarly situated defendants who commit the same offense. This court has used the guidelines in almost every case, that I'm aware of, to evaluate the variance. And so when the district court did not use the guidelines, it makes this court's work all that more difficult. In this appeal, the government has offered two main arguments to support the district court's sentence. First, the government relies on the worst of the victim's accounts of what occurred. However, the district court did not appear to rely on any of the victim's accounts. My reading of the sentencing is that the district court actually relied more on Mr. Bradley's account, which was of a consensual sexual encounter. Furthermore, the evidence, the physical evidence, didn't really support the victim's accounts either. The DNA sample, for instance, from the motel room sheet was of the victim. And it's my impression from reading the transcript of the sentencing and of the change of plea hearing that this evidence actually changed the government's recommendation from 10 years, which is what the government said it would recommend at the change of plea hearing, to 7 at the actual sentencing. Although I don't usually rely on probation officers' observations on appeal, in this case, the probation officer actually met with the victim and was the only person who spoke with the person. And the probation office didn't recommend any increase from the guideline range. Second, the government also relies on the district court's conclusion that Mr. Bradley had, in essence, killed the victim. There's no question that the victim suffered from the offense conduct. However, as I point out in my brief, it appears as though his suffering may have more to do with the fact that he was disclosed as having homosexual tendencies than it did from the actual offense conduct. And part of that was that a newspaper actually published his name and a picture of him. And I don't believe that that would support a sentence of 20 years in this case.
Of course, that of course, was not under the control of the defendant, but it was, I guess it could be argued, it was a consequence of what occurred.
I suppose, but it's an un, it's a consequence that actually you couldn't actually anticipate. It's really unconscionable for a newspaper to report that information. It's standard procedure for them not to. In fact, I've never seen this before.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Excuse me.
The district court also appeared to believe that he had done this before.
So, your position. So, was there a request by the defense to have the victim testify, or no?
No, Your Honor. Actually, the prosecution mentioned at the sentencing that the weather was inclement, but at the same time, they had actually contacted the victim and the victim's mother to ask if they wanted to come to the sentencing because they'd drive them there. And they declined. But no, defense counsel did not call the witness or subpoena him. The defense counsel relied on the facts of the case, the guideline range, the fact that Mr. Bradley had no criminal history whatsoever. He was in his early 50s. He'd been married for 30 years. He had four children. Of course, his marriage had dissolved before the sentencing. He had lost basically his whole life as well. And that's what defense counsel relied on at sentencing.
Didn't the district judge make some determination that it was likely that Mr. Bradley had done similar things on other occasions or was likely to do it again?
Your Honor, that's exactly what the district court said. But the district court didn't explain exactly how that there's evidence in the record for that. First of all, that he had done it again, the district court appeared to rely on what was on his hard drive. There were only two images that were considered child pornography in the pre-sentence report. There was no explanation of they're not in the record. And in fact, Mr. Bradley told the district court at sentencing that the victim had actually sent him a couple of pictures of himself. So it's not clear that those weren't those pictures. So that would be associated with this offense, not another offense.
Weren't there some accounts of some other liaisons like this?
Not in this case. In the Miller case, there was. But in this case, what we had were...
On his computer, I thought there
were... There were pictures on his computer, but
not
they were...
Not pictures, but some written accounts.
There were stories. The prosecution calls them pornography stories or coming out stories. I mean, if it weren't homosexual, it would... I don't think it would really matter to anybody, but it's on his computer. It doesn't mean he can't control himself or couldn't control himself until his offense. And, the district court did seem to rely on that, but it doesn't really show anything about any prior contacts. And, in fact, this offense didn't occur on a computer. It was through phone calls. But the judge also seemed to rely on his impression that he would do it again.
And what evidence was presented of that from a psychiatrist or a social worker or anybody that analyzed? I think is this generally concluded or generally known, and I've seen in other cases where they talk about the fact that just because someone is caught this one time doesn't mean that there's not a backstory and a front story to come.
That's actually one of the problems with both of these arguments. The government didn't argue either one of them. There was no expert opinion either one way or the other. And that he would do it again is just complete speculation on this record, especially given his otherwise prior exemplary conduct.
And I have no time left at all for rebuttal.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Norwood.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court and Brother Counsel. The case is pretty straightforward. What is reasonable? What is a reasonable sentence?
And so why don't you address some of the points that he raised, like there's no evidence that he had committed other crimes in the past or that he would in the future?
I will get to that, Your Honor. Good
choice to get there now.
It would be.
I'm trying, Your Honors.
Gulp a couple of times and give it a shot.
I've done these cases a lot to be direct, there is no evidence that he has done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is no direct evidence of that. I've been doing these kinds of cases for years, and unless the defendant self-admits, usually there is not any evidence that they did it before.
Is there any evidence from which you could infer, which a reasonable person could infer that he'd done it before?
Your Honor.
With an underage.
I believe there is. What the evidence that suggests that would be that on his computer there were, you were talking about those stories, there were 9 stories involving encounters, sex stories involving encounters with teenage boys specifically. There was also adult pornography on there, but there were stories involving sexual encounters with teenage boys that...
Had any of those people been interviewed or any...
No, I'm not sure.
They came about? Do we know if those stories were true? Did he admit that they were true?
Your Honor, I believe these are fictional stories off the Internet. I'm not certain.
These
I did not
were not
read
written
the
by
stories.
Him. These were something he
right.
drew down
he
from the Internet.
He would download right. from the Internet. Yes, Your Honor.
That's what I'm trying to get to. So, yeah, you're saying that's evidence
that's my understanding.
That he's done it before. So, you know, if these were his stories or you had interviewed some of the people that were on these stories or something, then that might count. I'm having difficulty with, well, how did he know he was engaged before?
Yes, Your Honor. There was no evidence that these were stories involving him. It's my understanding there were fictional stories off the Internet involving sexual encounters with teenage boys that a person like Mr. Bradley would read and
right.
receive sexual gratification from.
To me, that's not enough. So go on to what's the next thing.
That's fine, Your Honor.
You said generally having the pornography on the machine.
There was child pornography on his computer. There were these stories on his computer. There was an image of a small girl eating a ice cream cone shaped like a penis. There was...
So this again... So this is your best evidence, I take it, that he committed other crimes. These photos and what was on the machine. These images on the machine and these fictional stories.
Yes, and there were other images of teenage boys with bare chests and what appeared to have an erect penis under their clothing. And unlike, I know counsel in a previous argument talked about somebody with a, these people have an impulse to act. This wasn't an impulse to act. This was a calculated decision over a period of time to do an act.
So the question then is, is there any other evidence that he acted before, other than loading stuff on the computer and this one incident he was charged with?
I said at the beginning, this is the evidence. There is no evidence that he himself had done an act before.
Nor did the government argue that at sentencing. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the position.
Mm-hmm.
No, Your Honor, there was not any. If there was evidence that he had done it before.
How did the judge get there?
Right.
I suppose you'd have to ask Judge Gilbert. I believe it's from inferring these facts and from taking a look at the defendant. How do I want to say this?
One thing we can't do right now is ask the judge. The record is the record.
I understand, Your Honor. I understand, but you're asking me something impossible. How did the judge do something when the record is what it is? And pardon?
That's why she did it. She knew it was impossible.
That's fine. I mean, the record is what it is.
You can't jump over tall buildings in a single bound. I understand.
Pardon?
You can't jump over tall buildings in a single bound.
Not in this outfit, and not without a big S on my chest, Your Honor. No. This is sort of intuition more than anything. I'm not sure if you all have watched a TV show called The Catch a Predator, where they catch people in these type of stings, and they always say, "Well, this is my first time doing it." Well, of course it's not.
Drug dealer
gets caught. This is my first time doing it.
I've seen To Catch a Predator, and we can't use that.
No, I understand, Your Honor. If there were evidence that he had done it before, the government would have presented that evidence. There wasn't that evidence. But that doesn't necessarily make this sentence unreasonable. What's going on is the district court, we have a sentencing process now where the guidelines are simply advisory and the range is basically the statutory range, so long as the judge evaluates the 3553A factors.
Let me just stop. Go ahead.
And articulate and reasons that can be reviewed for reaching the sentence.
Yes, Your Honor. And
reasons
Judge
based
Gilbert,
on the evidence.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand. And the government believes Judge Gilbert did a good job of explaining why he was doing what he was doing.
Let's forget what he did before. Let's get to the future. because part of what he says is that, you know, he wants to avoid this happening again, and so this whole recidivism issue in the record, there's no evidence in the record to support that, is there?
That he would do it in the future?
Yes.
There's no psychological data or anything in the record that he would do it in the future. Mm-hmm. But there is also specific deterrence where at least this defendant will not do it in the future if he is incarcerated to a lengthy term of imprisonment.
Well, he won't do it to anybody outside the penitentiary system.
At least not a minor. It's a situation where Judge Gilbert, the government believes, did an adequate job of explaining why he was handing down the sentence he did. He went through the 3553A factors. He explained his reasoning. If this court disagrees and says he did not say enough or relied on information that this court does not believe is enough for a 20-year sentence, obviously this court can say it.
Actually, he said too much.
Well, and maybe that's the case. If you exact those words and look at what he did,
Well, let me ask you this. In this Miller case, isn't this like so close to this situation where there was a female like Bradley? She was educated. She had no record. She pleaded guilty to traveling in interstate commerce to engage in prohibited sexual activity with a 14-year-old she met online. Her guideline range was 70 to 87 months. She got 120 months based in part on an unsubstantiated belief that recidivism rates for child sex offenders are massive and treatment options are bleak. And in that case, the government and the court didn't identify any supporting evidence. And that case was sent back because, you know, there wasn't anything specific in the record to support it.
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I'm very familiar with that case, as that was my case also. Mm-hmm. And in that case, Judge Murphy made a statement during the sentencing that the recidivism rates are massive. That was a statement that he made during his explanation of 3553A factors. It's sort of like this case. Then the court says, well, Mr. Norwood, what evidence was there? Well, there wasn't. It was during the judge's explanation of the 3553A
well
factors.
Recidivism rate may be enormous.
You may be right. It wasn't
nothing in the record to demonstrate it.
Right. Yeah, neither side presented any evidence at sentencing, and the judge made this statement, and then it comes up on appeal and says, well, why didn't you present evidence at sentencing about this? The government did not know that Judge Murphy was going to say it in that case. The government did not know that Judge Gilbert was going to say what he said in this case. We don't know what, obviously, the judge is going to say. However,
well, let me just stop you for a minute. Do you think that, and I recognize the position you're in as a lawyer and with the court there, but, you know, I was just trying to think how you could avoid this kind of situation happening in the future. You know, Judge, that's not the argument that we're making on the recidivism because we don't have any evidence in the record. You know, are you sure the court wants to rely on that? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you don't want to stop the judge in the middle. I don't know.
It's very difficult. I know you were. I believe you were a district court judge, and I know Judge Tinder was.
All of us were.
Well, as you're pronouncing sentence and explaining your reasoning, having the government stand up and say, "Judge, I think you're doing it wrong." Sometimes isn't very prudent.
Right.
It isn't prudent for the government
right.
to do.
And no, I wasn't suggesting you stand up right
you're
then.
You're thinking
but
of futures at that stage. You have to be before that same guy next
exactly.
week, next month, and so on.
It's difficult. I mean, I've appeared in front of Judge Gilbert for over 12 years now. He's a fair judge. He's a compassionate judge. And again, the government believes he explained as best he could. If you extract, I would suggest extracting any statements that you believe are not supported by the evidence and then see if the sentence is still reasonable. If this court can, then it can uphold it and just say, well, the judge made an imprudent statement about recidivism. However, based on everything else that he said, which is based on the record, the sentence is still reasonable.
Just finally, this wasn't, I mean, you had recommended something in the 5 to 7 year range, not 20, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I recommended, I believe, 87 months. And there was a Seventh Circuit case slightly before that which said you had to tie variances to the guidelines, and I tried my best to do that. I think this shows, very briefly, this shows that obviously Judge Gilbert isn't a rubber stamp for the government and made his own determination as to what was reasonable.
All right. Thank you. Does he have any time left? 1 minute?
Unless the court has any questions.
I think a wise choice. We will take the briefs and the argument. Again, counsel, you did a great job. We'll take everything under advisement and we'll rule. Thank you.